From KLCC Studios, this is Oregon on the Record.
I'm Michael Dunn. If you were to identify the theme of the last Oregon legislative session, it would be one word: transportation. Passing a massive transportation package was Governor Kotek's priority one. She even forced legislators to go into a special session to pass this bill. So it was a really big deal that recently the governor urged legislators to scrap the whole thing. Today on the show, you'll hear from a reporter at the Oregon Capitol Chronicle to get up to speed on this latest twisting plot and get the download on what happens next. Then we'll talk with our own Zach Ziegler about a disturbing new report about Oregon's low snowpack and water supply and what it could mean for the rest of the year. Like watching a tennis match, the head-turning actions of the governor and the legislature on the massive transportation package has people wondering where we are and where we're going with regard to funding major road and infrastructure projects. Oregon Capitol Chronicle's politics reporter picks up the story. Alex Baumhardt, a reporter with the Oregon Capitol Chronicle. Alex, always appreciate talking to you.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, this transportation package, It's to describe its journey is like trying to tell an uninitiated person the plot of Stranger Things. Give us the brief history, if you will, of how it got here and sort of what's happened to it.
Sure. I think for the sake of what's in front of us going into this next legislative session,
is
that, you know, a couple years ago, the state realized there were some big updates that needed to be made to how we pay for roads, bridges, transportation infrastructure via the Oregon Department of Transportation. So there was this big sort of statewide listening tour. Legislators went across the state, held meetings with locals, you know, what their needs, fears, worries were, infrastructure needs, but also concerns about costs and where the money would come from. And they came to the legislative session early 2025 and started hammering away at this package that was, you know, and the double-digit billions that ended in this legislative session without passing went into a special session because it was of such great importance, right? Without at least multi-billion-dollar package of the next 10 years to fund this pretty big budget gap at the Department of Transportation, there were hundreds of transportation employees who were going to lose their jobs. There were local transit districts that were really going to get hosed as far as money coming in for buses, trains. So by the end of September, we had a package. It had passed by, you know, a hair in the legislature in a special session. And then, you know, almost immediately after, several Republican lawmakers started organizing an effort to get it repealed because it involves taxes and fees, gas tax going up, payroll tax going up. The idea was they were upset about that and they wanted to put it on the ballot in November. They wanted Oregon voters to decide. So that was successful. We learned, you know, early this new year. And because that ballot referendum is slated to go out in November, it basically pauses anything in the package that would generate revenue. So the other day, Governor Tina Kotek had said, let's put the kibosh on it. We're going to start from square one. Legislature, find every dollar you can to fill the budget in the short term, right? We can't have like a totally defunct transportation system when snow and ice and cold weather are coming. Let lawmakers come back in 2027 and do better. So that's where we're at. We basically, you know, as a reporter, this was a big hot ticket item that was happening throughout the 6-month legislative session. And now we are literally back to square one.
Boy, I mean, can the transportation department sort of limp along until what? Until 2027 and they hammer out a complete package that gets passed?
That will be, you know, we will find out after this 1 month legislative session that starts February 2nd.
Okay.
The governor essentially said, we need to redirect money within the department to critical infrastructure, jobs, and everything after that we'll figure out. So the question will be, is there enough money to plug all these holes?
Is this, I don't know, you know, looking at the politics of it, is this a win by the Republicans? Is this a loss for Kotek? Is this kind of like, well, you know, this is how the sausage gets made?
My take is that this is a big loss for everyone.
Okay.
And I think what's most the sort of largest collateral loss there is truly a clear understanding of what needs to get done and why. I think at the end of the day, this package was not developed because a bunch of people thought it'd be a great idea to charge Oregonians more money at the gas pump or more money on their payroll taxes or more money for their title and registration fees, right? Which would all have gone up if the package was allowed to sort of be executed as passed.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think the people behind that package thought that was like a huge win. What was a win was we're going to close this budget hole. We're going to stave off hundreds of layoffs. And there are projects that really need investment now, right? The longer we wait, the more expensive they get. It also included an audit of the Department of Transportation and its spending and some of the projects. So that was something that both sides really wanted. They were concerned that a lot of projects were getting out of control in their costs. But now we basically put all this effort into something that won't do what it intended to do. We still have the same problems. I think the Republican lawmakers behind the referendum, or I'm sorry, the ballot referral, were glad that it passed. They really see themselves as sort of saving Oregonians money in a time where, you know, a lot of people are suffering economically. But at the end of the day, the money for sort of future transportation infrastructure projects needs to be generated. We live in a world where more people drive electric cars. They drive high mileage cars. ODOT relies heavily on gas tax. We need to modernize some of these things, and this basically puts us at an impasse with these major challenges that need to be faced. So I kind of see it as a loss all around, but I think individual lawmakers might see wins and losses according to their sort of position.
Sure, sure. Let me reintroduce you to the audience. We're talking with Alex Baumhart, who is a reporter at the Oregon Capital Chronicle. Alex, I'm wondering, this is all happening in the shadow of so much, and we've talked about this before, so much cuts from the federal government, including transportation costs and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Does this, you know, especially now in 2026, is this about the worst possible time for this kind of problem to occur?
Yeah, I Governor Kotek the other day, when she was sort of imploring the legislature to find money for the Department of Transportation, was very clear, none of it can come from the state's general fund, which is, you know, sort of our big pot of money we use to fund most things. It's just too delicate. We're walking into the legislative session with a pretty big chunk of the budget that we thought was going to be there, not there, according to the state's latest revenue forecast. So already, you know, agencies had to submit budgets that had at least a 5% cut to current spending levels. So, and that's entirely in response to the tax and spending cut bill that Republicans passed in Congress this summer.
Sure.
Because Oregon's, you know, tax system sort of mirrors the federal one. So revenue that had been anticipated coming through some of these taxes that have been cut, reduced, gotten away with, they come down to the state level as well. So it's really a bad time. It's like you put off buying a new car because you were waiting to have more money. And then all of a sudden you also broke your leg. You have a massive medical bill. You don't have any extra money to throw at a new car. So not only are you wounded, you can't go anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. Alex, while I have you, and I know you live up in Portland, and I did want to kind of ask, you know, what, given what's happened, the shooting that happened, what's the feeling in Portland right now with the shooting that happened from the Border Patrol agents and the two people who were wounded?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of anger and frustration. I think emotions are really raw because of everything that happened in Minneapolis. You know, we don't have like bystander video to look at.
Sure.
But everything that was captured in Minneapolis and has been widely broadcast, you know, you can't deny what you see. It's frightening. And I think a lot of people saw that, heard the news about what happened here in Portland with two immigrants being shot by federal agents. And then, you know, the first information we really got was from the Department of Homeland Security. Trust was already very eroded because of the contradictions between what the Department of Homeland Security said happened in Minnesota versus what you could see in the video. So tensions are high. At this point, as a reporter, I am just so anxious for information. There was a press conference with Portland Police Chief Bob Day, where he was sort of clearing up some of the accusations that DHS made, you know, sort of against what he knows and what sort of other county court and sheriff and state officials know. So I think we just want more information. But what hangs in the balance is sort of, and more broadly in Portland, a deep sense of mistrust with the federal government and the current regime right now, very deep mistrust with federal agents from immigration to investigation to enforcement, and sort of really, you know, compounded grief and anger also just from the fall with the Trump administration trying to deploy National Guard troops into the city. It's a very sort of coming to a boil feeling.
Yeah. And my last question to you, Alex, is this, to that point, and I know you've covered protests in Portland before, do you feel like what happened in Minneapolis and what happened now in Portland, do you think that has any potential to dampen protesters coming out? Or do you think that it, and I say that because obviously a terrible tragedy occurred. Somebody died who was a protester there. Do you think it dampens the efforts? Or do you think actually no, even though there's real risk now, it's going to embolden more people to go out and protest what's happening?
No, I think, you know, in the aftermath of the shooting in Minneapolis, we saw thousands of people pour into the streets in that neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Actually, I used to live a few blocks from there when I worked at American Public Media, Minnesota Public Radio.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, a friend sent me video from the neighborhood. There were thousands of people that gathered last night outside of Portland City Hall. There were hundreds of people outside of the ICE processing facility south of downtown, hundreds of people. I think it is... it is not having any effect of sort of keeping people at home, or rather people who would show up to protest to, I mean, no doubt all of this is keeping many people at home who are afraid because of their skin color or their immigration status, or even, you know, citizens who are just concerned that they'll be misidentified. But yeah, as far as protest goes, I don't see any sort of water being thrown on the embers here.
Yeah, yeah. She does a great job for the Oregon Capital Chronicle, Alex Baumhart. Always, always appreciate you coming on, and stay safe out there.
Thank you, Michael.
We're going to talk now with KLCC's Zach Ziegler about Oregon's low, low snowpack. Zach Ziegler, KLCC's reporter, thanks so much for coming in and talking to us.
Yeah, sure thing.
Yeah, I should say before we begin, for listeners out there, you know, before Zach came to us, he covered water issues in Arizona, a state where water is even more life and death. But, you know, you're the guy on H2O issues. So let's talk about this. You had a great piece about the snowpack here in Oregon. You know, how low is it?
It's quite low right now. Okay. The USGA splits Oregon into about 12 zones for its snowtell reports. Only two of those 12 zones are above 50% of normal. Most are more in the 30s, a couple in the 40s, but also a couple in the 20s. So that's quite below what would be considered normal for the last 30 years.
Okay. Is it a simple equation of just not getting enough moisture?
That's a bit of it, but it's not the whole story. Okay. Most of Oregon is pretty close to normal for the water year, which starts October 1st. You know, there are some areas that are a little light as far as the percentage of normal they've got. It's in the 80s. Some are a little over, though. So as far as how dry the year has been so far, you know, November compared to old past Novembers, you know, it's in the mid-20s. It was a little dry. We're talking records back to 1892, so okay. Like north of 100. In the 20s for being dry, that's pretty up there. You know, December, much more middling. January, it's hard to say because we're not that far in.
Sure.
So, but I will say the issue, I think, really is more so heat.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, the temperatures have been going back to that data that I was talking about, December was the eighth warmest average temperature recorded.
Well, and I'm wondering too. So if I'm hearing you right, there's plenty of water falling. It's just that when it gets here, it doesn't turn to snow, right?
Yeah. We're not talking a drought. Okay. You know, the latest U.S. drought monitor was what started me on this story, actually. I spotted a little bit of moderate drought in Douglas County, and I was like, oh, that seems odd for the rainy season in Oregon. You know, there's some more dry areas in like Douglas and Lane and Deschutes counties. So I called up a hydrologist at the Oregon Water Resources Department, and he said, yeah, that's not great, but it happens. But okay. Like you said, the heat has been the issue. This has been the eighth warmest December as far as average temperature on record. November and January have been closer to normal, but December was about 5 degrees warmer than recent averages, which, you know, heat is not exactly friendly to snow.
Sure, absolutely, absolutely.
I'm not breaking any news here. Snow is just frozen water.
Well, it gets to the point, though, I think maybe people don't realize is how important, you know, snowpack is like a bank. It's like deposits, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, that's really what keeps things rolling through once things get a little dry here, snow starts to melt. That keeps the streams going and the rivers going oftentimes. So not having that bank there could mean drier conditions in the near future, which has a whole bunch of issues. And I mean, we're not even getting into the economic issue, which was another story that I covered recently about how the ski slopes are handling this.
Well, and obviously that's a big concern because obviously, you know, that is an economic driver for so much of our recreation. And it's kind of scary. I know you talked to some of the ski operators and I imagine they're probably crossing their fingers, holding rabbit's feet, whatever they can do.
Yeah. I mean, the good news is, you know, talking to them, you don't hear a lot of alarm, but you know, that's just kind of the mentality of a skier or a snowboarder there. But they were saying, yeah, it's been kind of a rough start to the year. A lot of slopes were just opening in January, whereas normal is maybe kind of around just after Thanksgiving or sometime in December, at least. Places weren't opening until late December, early January. That's losing a month's worth of revenue, and it's not like they can exactly reduce a lot of their costs. In fact, some of them were incurring more costs because they were trying to open up using human-made snow, which is a rather expensive process.
Well, and as you've been describing, that's great that they can manufacture snow, but it doesn't work if it's too hot, isn't it?
Yeah, it just goes away. And it's also not necessarily a lot of skiers and snowboarders, as having been one myself. It's not exactly their favorite surface.
Sure. So we're talking about Oregon in our listening area, but I mean, are other areas being impacted? How widespread is this issue?
You know, it hasn't exactly been a problem for the region. It seems to be mainly located to Oregon. I looked into the same, actually, for Washington. They're not having the issues that we are, although, you know, if you do the drive up I-5, some of that area is lacking in snowpack, but it really seems to be an issue mainly for Oregon right now, as we've had this little heat wave in December.
Yeah. You know, a lot of people are listening going, okay, what does this all mean? Talk about what these impacts are.
Yeah. So, I mean, as we touched on a bit, you know, this could hurt rivers and streams once we start to get into the dry season. But beyond that, you know, let's keep looking at what those rivers often feed. It's our water system sometimes. Sure. When you have reservoirs that hold up and feed into a city's water system. And then also you start maybe worrying about a little bit of dryness issues as we get into the later summer and the wildfire season. There's plenty of, you know, down the road ramifications of a lack of snowpack.
Yeah, and then of course that probably hurts hydroelectric power generation as well.
Yeah. One more area that is very water reliant in this area that, you know, it's not so much reliant on rain. It is reliant on that nice even flow of water that comes as snow melts.
Yeah, and I can imagine that farmers and ranchers are very concerned about, obviously, crops and whatnot.
Yeah, you definitely get more just concerns all around for an area that, you know, historically is not very used to lacking water or lacking snow. That's something that I heard is like these years like this, as far as the snowpack are, they aren't, this isn't a super rare instance, but it isn't a super common one either, but it is getting a little more common over time.
I'm not sure if you have information, but I am wondering, you know, could we make this up? I mean, is it possible? I mean, we are just in January, and I know that sometimes weather can be extremely fickle, but is there an opportunity here for us to get colder and wetter at the same time?
Yeah, and we have actually been seeing that lately. Temperatures have dropped, although things are also dry with those temperatures, as we have kind of this stagnant air pattern, especially over the area around Eugene. That is, that could move out. We could get a couple of nice atmospheric rivers, and all of a sudden, hey, my stories that I've written on this topic become very irrelevant, and I'm getting to write stories about how, man, we had just an absolute, bang up January and February for snow totals. It is still early enough in that snowy season that things could correct, and we could be just having this conversation all for naught. We'll see,
It's always funny. It's like, as far as we come as a species in terms of technology, we still are reliant on the weather, There's not much we can do there.
Yeah, not much that can be gone on there. We have yet to get that, weather-making machine that we always saw in, sci-fi
exactly.
And kids' cartoons.
Exactly. Zach Ziegler, he covers so many issues for us here in Oregon. Zach, thanks so much for coming in and talking to us.
Sure thing.
That's the show for today. All episodes of Oregon on the Record are available as a podcast at klcc.org. Monday on the show, a special NPR program for the Martin Luther King holiday. I'm Michael Dunn, host of Oregon on the Record. Thanks for listening.